everybody. Welcome back to The Gods Will Not Save You, The Wire Revisited. I'm Willie.
Hi, everyone. This is Jakob, and this is the podcast where the hosts, Willie and I, do a deep read into each and every episode of The Wire. And episodes, no more years.
anchor.fm/thegodswillnotsaveyou/support. If you want to throw us some last minute bucks, that would be appreciated. Yeah, let's get right into it. We're talking about season 5, episode 7, Took. And the teaser starts off with, as Jakob so brilliantly dubbed him, Crank Yankers McNulty. Only 90s kids will get that reference.
Right?
Comedy Central show.
Yeah, and like because I'm so behind the times and was deprived of those basic joys in growing up with like Comedy Central and stuff, I think I've watched it probably at your house or another friend's spot a few times. But again, I'm late to that. I'm late to The Wire. I'm just...
I was late to The Wire.
Yeah, so. I mean, most of us are.
I mean, that's... David Simon dubs himself the PBS of HBO. Nobody catches on quite when it's, first airing. But yeah, what do we make of... go ahead.
I was going to say for a minute, like when I was... getting more acquainted, I would sometimes be like, wow, this show's like, and then the guy who makes all the historical documentaries help too. Like, wow. And then it's like, this is not Ed. Ken Burns.
It's Ed Burns.
So stupid.
That's funny, though.
Shout out Ed, man.
I mean, shout out Ken too.
Yeah, shout out Ked.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, can you imagine that documentary if Ed Burns worked on it? It would be like, oh yeah, we got to get this like great archival footage of like this, Great Depression era worker or person trying to find work go from breadline to breadline, and we're just gonna follow him for the whole episode.
Yeah. Just show that wagon for another 20 minutes. just pictures of the wagon just moving to the west.
I mean, in some areas of like, cinematic artistry, his aesthetic would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah. And you did one time say that, like, got to do the like Ken Burns of the War of the Downers war.
Yeah.
Crime is bad.
Yeah. What do we think of Lester Freeman and McNulty's little prank call?
Crack daddy, whack daddy. I caught that this time. I've never heard that where McNulty's going like, and then Scott's face, he's like, oh, what? Crack daddy, whack daddy? It's really kinky stuff. But yeah, I mean, he's got the gum on purpose, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Another commentary episode, so I mean, I'm excited.
I don't know.
You keep it fresh, man. I appreciate it. I know Willie two times can't resist it, or else you know it's gonna happen.
You mean like Tony two times?
Guy who, shout out Tony two times.
He has his own YouTube channel talking about Baltimore history.
It's crazy. Check it out. You're out there.
there was like maybe some speculation going on some of the comments I read on the internet about how like, this could be like a sly commentary on how Dominic West, the actor, struggled to get down the Baltimore accent throughout his run.
Yeah.
So this was like him like really trying to like show up for the job in this moment.
And he says like, oh, it's my heritage, right?
Yeah, that's funny. But it,
the two Brits, or Clark Brit, Peters, kind. I mean,
Brit
know.
By
yeah,
honorary Brit.
Yeah.
But they're concocting this whole spoof or whatever in the utility closet right next to Holly, who's monitoring the call.
He's like, I was sleeping, and then the call came. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty crazy.
Yeah, and we got a Sidner, doing the decoy work at the harbor.
There's a lot of disrespect in this episode. Like, they, you know, assume any, like, tweakers from Dundalk, right? Like, they think it's a gearhead.
Yeah.
But I've, like, trashed on Dundalk before, too, probably. Like, oh, like, it's a white trash person. Like, they're probably from Dundalk. I'm like, oh, shit, like, Dundalk not going to be happy with me. Sorry, Rudy Gay. Anyways, Sidner, you do preface this by, like, is he too good to be dealing with these guys? I mean, he is a cop. But,
I mean, he is, but he looks kind of like, I mean, he's kind of got, like, reluctantly thrown into this whole scenario, and he almost seems, like, guilty that, like, cops are just, like, randomly, you know, throwing people down on the ground and stuff around.
Or like, what, well, like that white cop lady has got to be in the running for, like, hard, like, the bomber. She's like, get your phone out now, do it, get on the fan out and take names, really means an ass whooping,
pound the pavement, literally.
Yeah, citizens' faces.
Yeah, but Dominic West did give a neat little tidbit and said, like, that cop was a real cop, and she was kind of like the spokesperson on local television. But let's, so McNulty and Freeman are conducting the prank call to Scott to, you know, get themselves some more heat and publicity to the case, and yada, 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 like all that stuff. Sends him the photo of Mr. Bobbles to, like, you know, get some heat on there, get some heat on their side. But, like, Scott is so, like, incompetent and, like, kind of, like, dumb that, like, I feel like he almost has, like, forgotten his own lie that, like, the serial killer supposedly called him in the first place. So, like, I'm still, like, kind of, like, dumbfounded that a lot of more of his colleagues aren't, you know, kind of skeptical of why he seems so flustered in the moment, like, when he should have supposedly already had experience talking to this guy.
Yeah, he called me again.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, this show's so, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
This episode's crazy.
I mean, this is like, yeah.
This is when it starts getting where you're like, okay, yeah.
I mean, this is like to the point where it's almost like satire. Yeah, it's just like, relentlessly poking fun at our media ecosystem.
Pretty good stuff. I mean, you know.
The room that Freeman and McNulty were in conducting their phony prank call was the utility closet right next to where Holly was.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm still, you know, I'm very much an average viewer regardless.
It's satire. And,
yeah, but I'm like, wait, they keep panning across that closet that's right next to him. So, like, they're in there making these crazy prank calls with voice modulators, which, hey, any 90s kid will know, like, if you had a smart friend who had some, like, technology, you could really do some good prank calls. Like,
yeah.
I remember.
But let's talk a little, you know, this prank call has got the whole department, you know, all in a, you know, they're handing out overtime like it's candy and getting everybody focused in on this big story. And Bunk is still holding, you know, strong to his values. You know, fuck your stripes, Landsman. Fuck McNulty. I'm working murders. I'm doing my own thing. And he's like the one holdout who's not buying into the whole hysteria. Of course, like, he knows the full context behind it, but it still says something that, like, how easily manipulated, like, the powers that be are from this whole thing. Like,
you know, he's like arresting Mike. Like, what?
Like, well, Carver brought Mike into.
Well, I mean, he tells him, right? Like, but, like, you know, like I said, another one of, like, a part of the issues in my life. Like, I have a few, but I'm not saying I have few issues. I'm saying I have a few.
Yeah.
And one of them is, like, I watch that show, First 48, once in a while, and I'm like, no, I'm just doing it to, like, gain more context into like this whole propaganda stuff. Yeah. You know, it's like an insight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Insider. That's what you're saying, or insight?
Insight, like insight.
Oh, I'm an insightful insider.
There you go.
No,
That's why I chose to do this with you, man.
Yeah. who would have agreed to do something like this besides us two freaks? Yeah. But anyways, I'm like, watching the show, and like when they need a witness or something, they just go like, oh, just come down to the station. Like, come, like, I don't know if they, well, yeah, they do that. I don't want to give them credit. But, like, you know, what probable cause did he have to just go, like, bring Michael there in handcuffs? You know, it's like, we think he did something, maybe.
Yeah, he didn't necessarily kill his stepdad, but there's some shady stuff going around with
him. He's, like, interrogating him. Like, you definitely couldn't have done this because you're not grown enough. You're not strong enough. But, you know, we still brought you here like you're under arrest. Like, we didn't even give you a chance. Like, as a minor, I'm like, damn, that's like, you know, old Bunk got to stay behind the rest of everyone out in their fake trial activities to maybe violate some kids' civil rights, even though, okay, Mike's like, you know, he's killed people already.
Yeah.
At least one person. Yeah. And, well, yeah, maybe two. But still, it's like, okay.
Just a stark contrast with this season from last season, like the two interrogation scenes that Bunk conducts with Randy and Michael, you see like all the joy drained from their faces. I mean, Michael is in a better situation than Randy is, but they're both completely different people from, you know, just 1 year ago, where they probably would have, you know, been a little more forthcoming, or I mean, we saw Randy and how he was forthcoming and it spelled his doom for him. But yeah, like Michael is even more far removed from, you know, trusting any adult figures at this point.
Right. Yeah. Very, you know, bleak.
So you wrote in here, McNulty screwing Kima over twofold because of IKEA recommendations and making her run around.
Thanks, man. You really, you know, these are really punched up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, pretty straight to the point. Yeah, she's having to do a lot of work.
That's not necessary.
Yeah. you know, parents are distraught regardless.
Yeah.
You know, he's impacting real people's lives. Like, you know, they're not like wealthy, as they say, but, you know, they are still like blue collar-ish, I guess, and they don't have a lot of resources, but like, and their son is another victim of like the, you know, decay around Baltimore, the Rust Belt, and America in general.
Yeah.
Who knows? Could have lost his job. Who knows?
The mom, when we see like the shot of her, she's just like always on the verge of tears, crying.
And Kima's like, God damn, I still got to go get this stupid IKEA furniture. Yeah. Like, can I get on with my day?
She just does. She's not cognizant of how many different ways McNulty is screwing her over. Is IKEA furniture even... Like, I've never had an outburst, like, while, like, putting something together from IKEA. Like, I thought the whole premise was that it's, like, super simple to put together. What's the deal with that? It's just...
Yeah, I guess, like, yeah, I don't know. I kind of was... I obviously never really knew about IKEA furniture until maybe the second or third time I watched the show, so... Once I finally learn, I'm like, oh, what the hell have they been on? And I realize they're like alcoholics, mate. At least McNulty is. And he tells Kima to drink. So it's like, I'm terrible at that stuff. So there's someone like, you know, my better half. Like, that's the engineer. So that it's like out of my, I can't really speak to it. I would feel like really fake trout, like, you know, fake, like, Swedish fish.
I guess just murder police just aren't handy when it comes to building something for their children.
it just speaks to like their actual relationship with their kids.
I mean, Kima is no, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. She's definitely a better parent than McNulty is.
Yeah, or even, auntie.
Yeah, even if she has been absent from his life for a little while, it seems. But, you know, she reads, she, you know, does a nice little rendition of Goodnight Moon for the kid at the end of the episode.
Straight from, what's his name, Rocco, or the guy from Clockers?
Mm-hmm. When he's talking to his little girl. Yeah, Richard Price book, who also, you know, contributed to this episode. Man, they just snatch things left and right from that book for this show. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I was like,
it's like the third thing I can think of.
I mean,
but I guess he's cool with them, with David Simon just letting him steal all his little gems.
Kima lives near a shot spotter.
Damn. That's gotta, like, she has to literally bring work home with her.
Yeah, I mean, those are in, like, yeah, I mean, or a believe spotter. I spotted your belief in the city. No, but I mean, that, yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess if you live, like, in the city of Baltimore, even if it's like not a super bad area, I guess, or what, like, you would consider that. But I feel like those are targeted, like they put them in areas, but maybe that, like, I got to do a lot more research on the shot spotter stuff.
In their locale.
Yeah. Like, you know, how invasive they can be, or I'm sure there's another spin on it, but I'm like, oh, okay. That's, I don't know. She's always bragging about how much overtime she makes, but I guess she's like saving money if it's a less, like, you know, Lockhern. I don't know. It's less county. So she lives in the city, maybe? Okay. Yeah. Oh, I don't know, Willie. I'm just struggling.
No, it's okay. You know who's not struggling, though? Norris.
Oh, man, those guys.
All the people that are
he's
piggybacking on McNulty's, you know, white knight efforts and just pilfering the overtime from his.
Norris is like, what? Like, they're explaining the script to him. He's like, dude, you don't have to explain to me how to, like, skim overtime and, like, scam.
Yeah. Did you notice, like, there's this great little moment, you know, where McNulty's explaining, like, as you said, he's explaining the script, like, oh, yeah, just put my name on the CC, the over, blah, blah, blah. And Crutchfield's like, I know, you got it, boss. And McNulty's like, what did you call me? Like,
yeah, he got mad.
He takes offense to that because he spent his whole career, like, railing against the system that now, like, he's looked at to be in a position of power. He feels, like, uncomfortable with it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I thought for a second it was, like, a racial thing, too, but...
Oh.
Maybe that's just where my mind's at.
I don't know.
In a poor place. I mean, but yeah, that's funny. More, that's a great point.
It's more great satire, I guess.
But I want the guy Crutchfield is asking for OT with, like, Garvey. I think that's a shout out to the homicide book, like, in one of the detectives. Mm-hmm. And I think one time I was like, you know, Willie, there's this guy, and Simon describes him as, like, as a racist, you know, like, pretty outward. And I think that because he describes all these other guys as these, like, what would be considered stereotypically to be someone who could be a racist, I think it's that guy. Because he's always described, like, wearing a nice suit and this and that. And after that article you sent me talking about the book Homicide, I think I was wrong. Because it's pretty clear that all of them were.
Oh, Jesus. That article I sent you from Intelligencer magazines,
like,
alleging that a lot of the characters from the book Homicide, you know, maybe it glossed over some of their misdeeds.
Yeah, and how a lot of the cases fell apart after, you know, trial, or they got people to confess to things or pin thing on, you know, young kids. A prominent documentary came out about that, and, like, Central Park 5 and all that. And I'm like, oh, then I'm, like, reading this homicide book, like, giddily, like, oh, my God, Willie, I can't even start our podcast until I finish this book, because, like, I got to bring up every little, like, detail about it. And then it turns out that it's just maybe not age the best. And maybe that's my next project, to like dissect more into like what the article laid out.
Yeah.
Where are we now with this kid? Like, is he...
No, I think your next project should be just going through everything you said in this podcast and apologizing for any yeah. moment that you feel like is problematic.
No, man, I just said it and forget it, man. I don't apologize for anything I say podcasting. And if I do, I'll just follow up with more about how it's really not me who's spreading misinformation.
Damn.
Because you can't cancel me. Okay, Willie, I pulled all our episodes off Spotify.
All right.
He doesn't know. Nah. What else?
Billy Murphy. Oh. Yeah, what a character.
Dude, Billy Murphy. Yeah, like, let's get off of that old last subject, because Billy Murphy, wow.
Yeah.
What a guy.
Yeah, we found out a lot of, like, fascinating stuff about him. He's a real-life attorney. He had a case recently where he was working on, you know, filing a class action lawsuit against Phoenix police for falsely arresting hundreds of protesters during the Black Lives Matter protesters in 2020 at the height of the pandemic.
Slumlords. Yeah. I'm sure Billy Murphy had fun, like, but I mean, he probably had fun being this like iteration
yeah.
of the character, not himself, right? Because he did mostly his based Billy for the most part, right?
Yeah, ran for mayor against William Donald Schaefer.
Yeah, he's like, this crap, like investing in the harbor and aquariums. What about the communities, man? We got illiteracy,
yeah.
asthma.
Yeah. That, you know, I was right all along, man.
Willie's, yeah, I mean, 100,000 people dying, like four times the amount of like deaths to homicides, you know, die of like environmental factors and pollution, asthma, man. So like, remember,
you heard this, it here
from yeah, you heard it from William. Royce knocking down the towers,
yeah.
far worse than anything that any of these like criminals could have ever, you know, done.
I mean, it's like literally a direct I mean, it's like the whole season is a metaphor for the war on terror, and like him knocking down those towers is kind of similar to like the yeah. images we saw of, on 9/11 of the Twin Towers getting knocked down and the,
there you go,
you know, ash filling the air.
Blowing my mind. No. But yeah, I mean, Billy did also represent, what's his name? Kenny Bird, the crazy dude with the strip club.
Kenny Bird Jackson.
Yeah. So, you know, he was involved in other, like elements of the city, but yeah, I think like his family is a, I got to figure out where he falls in exactly, but I think the Murphys like started the Afro-American. So this season about the press and media, and that was like the number one black news publication in Baltimore, I'm assuming. So I don't know exactly how he relates to, I think his dad was related. Like, I don't think he's like a direct, like great, great grandson of the guy who started the Afro-American, but I think their family also is like who the Murphy homes were named after, the former like high-rise projects where a lot of this stuff
yeah.
that went down in this show kind of was like, you know, modeled after.
Yeah.
So deeply ingrained in the city and a really fascinating guy.
In his first successful case, he defended the First Amendment rights of a controversial Black Panther Party newspaper, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, man. Wikipedia, not a, well, like, I remember I was telling somebody who's like, you know, in my life, pretty close to how, you know, it's not a reliable source. I'm like, this is extensively peer reviewed. It's Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Where do you think like we get half of our information? Like, we'll send you a thread.
We're not going to get, we're not going to get took on Wikipedia.
No, we're not. But, yeah, like he was a lawyer that, or as a candidate, he kind of was like, maybe, I don't know. I want to see like how he stacked up with that guy, Mfume Kwaisi, like who's been brought up
right.
and how people thought he was too hardcore. Like, you know, the like viewed as divisive were like same with Billy Murphy, but I don't know, like, you know, like how, if he was more progressive or radical than that guy, because, or that gentleman, but you know, he's basically considered like a racist by anyone that, like, by white people, I think. By most white people thought like he was too pro-black. Like, that's what racism probably meant in 1983 when he ran. It's like, you're pro-black agenda. Like, Jesus. You want to, like, you know, like, Baltimore's not just, like, there's people that live here. So the things you see when you drive through it or by it on the highway, like the harbor and all that, like, okay, that's great, but you're too, like, radical, man. Like,
So, I thought it was pretty funny that Dominic West was talking about, like, I mean, obviously Billy Murphy really, like, charismatic and does a great job in this episode. Probably wouldn't be able to tell that, like, this was, like, his only acting credit if you hadn't known about it beforehand. But Dominic West, like, did remark that, like, he didn't understand the concept of continuity or, like, filming. And it was like, okay, like, in that last take, you, like, rose your cane up at this, like, specific point. So we're doing it from a different angle, so you have to do the exact same thing again. And it was just, like, something he couldn't immediately, like, grasp the concept of.
He wasn't good. I mean, but, I could imagine him going off about it.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, I being in a courtroom and, you know, having a flair for the theatrics, you probably want to, like, try something different each time if you're being called upon to do it, like, countless amount of times.
I think, got arrested even a couple of times for being, like, in contempt of court, like, like, cases he was involved with or in, like, you know, a companion, like, I don't know, I saw some headlines, but I don't want to get too far into it because I don't know too much. But, like, if he's been, like, going at it with a judge, and he was a judge himself, like, what do you, like, he's like, what, Dominic West? Like, oh, I'll move my cane how I want to, man. I'm Billy Murphy Jr., man.
Yeah.
Come on the show, Billy Murphy. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, he's representing Clay Davis for this trial, and man,
dream team.
They work together beautifully. I mean, not in the sense that, like, justice is served in any way, shape, or form throughout this sham of a trial, but they do, like, really play off of each other, like, really well. Like, the fact that like, he doesn't cross-examine Lester Freeman at all just goes to show you that, like, oh yeah, this guy is not, like, interested in the facts at all. So of course he's not gonna, like, ask the person who's probably the most knowledgeable about everything that's going on any questions, because he just wants to get to, like, the showy part of the trial and, you know, have Clay stand up and empty his pockets.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing a number on old Rupert, and Davis is dropping lines about Survivor, which, unfortunately, you know, I know at the top of the show I said I didn't have too much knowledge of, like, you know, really transformative, great show of our generation, Crank Yankers, but I am very acquainted with network TV star Survivor.
Yeah, so, I think I watched the first season of that particular program.
I suppose so. Yes.
But
I've watched seven seasons. It's all we could watch after doing our chores and making our porridge.
And Clay is carrying Prometheus bound by Aeschylus. So yeah, like, I don't need to pronounce any of it right, because I'm just imitating what he's
That's
Prometheus bound.
And it's Aeschylus, right? Or is it Aeschylus?
I thought it was just Aeschylus.
Aeschylus. Oh, okay. Tell us a little more about it and how it ties in with everything here.
So this is a Greek tragedy. Prometheus bound and
simulation.
So yeah, I, like, you know, we've talked to death about how Simon is like, no, we're not Shakespearean, we're a Greek tragedy, because it, you know, the, you know, Greek gods are the institutions just throwing lightning bolts. But it's like, this is kind of like an ironic, you know, turning of the tables of, like, this whole Clay Davis is portraying himself as a victim of, you know, these institutions lashing out at him and, like, you know, making him feel small and unimportant in the grand scheme of things. Just a quick little summary from the Wikipedia page about, you know, what Prometheus Bound the play is actually about. It's based on the myth of Prometheus, a titan who defies Zeus and protects and gives fire to mankind, for which he is subjected to the wrath of Zeus and punished, which kind of goes along with, like, you know, what Clay Davis was saying, like, you know, as soon as I leave my house, I got to give money to the old lady with diabetes and this person with cancer. So it's like, yeah, he's giving fire to mankind or whatever, but in reality, he's conspiring with Zeus, and he is like one of the people or institutions or gods that is throwing lightning bolts at the little man.
That's a great take, man. I'm glad. I'm glad I tasked you with breaking this down.
No, it's not even a breakdown, really. It's just my deep read. But what's up with, like, Rupert? Like, he's so incompetent that, like, he can't object to, like, anything that's going on in the trial when, like, it obviously goes off the rails so many
times. He's just, like, sitting back, like, oh. But,
like, looks like he's, like, almost, like, ahead of the game at some point or something, where it's just, like, he doesn't, like, he's like, I'm just going to let this play out and we're going to come out on top. So much so to the point that I feel like they made a decision in the editing room where they, like, added him in yelling objection at one point when Clay Davis, like, empties his pockets out. But then when it cuts back to him, he's, like, still in the same position where he's just tenting his fingers. And it's like, yeah, they had to, like, add, like, it's so outlandish that they had to, like, have something resembling realism at one point, because, like, even on, you know, on the commentary, the series editor said, like, yeah, it's funny because after I did this episode, I did get called into jury duty and they object to everything that's happening in the trial. And it's like,
makes sense.
It's satire, though, maybe. I don't know.
That's one good lesson about rewatching the show that I'm glad I'm learning, is that it's not all, like, you know, and even looking back on my commentary from last season or even a few episodes ago, it's like, chill out, dude. Like, this doesn't all have to be like, as it tricks you into, you know, like, lulls you to sleep with its realism and, like, the details and all the pieces matter, but at the end of the day, you know,
it's still TV.
TV, and it's a great show, and it's probably better than anything else on TV, especially silly little football games.
I'm sorry for your loss, man.
Yeah.
All right, can we move on to Omar, you think?
Omar knew, just knew, where, you know, the stash was, according to the muscle.
Yeah.
Flushed a bunch of raw.
Yeah.
4 kilos.
Yeah. Woo! Savino's taken aback by that, you know. Omar's continuing on his one-man crusade against Marlo and his crew. He even, like, you know, continues to violate more of his code, or, you know, the truce that he's signed with, you know, or the informal truce he agreed upon with Bunk, no more bodies. And, you know, he just impulsively kills Savino. It's just like, he's, you know, it's like, if you haven't figured out by now that something bad is going to happen to Omar, like, this, like, puts the nail in the coffin for sure, like, when it just shows that he's such a shadow of his former self at this point, and he's just motivated by hatred and vengeance.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, great performance by Chris Clanton, you know, local guy. Also, like, showed some interest and love on our socials, like, one of the highlights of our run here. Check him out on, you know, We Own This City coming up.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Yeah, but Savino's no more, man. He had a, like, really extended run in the drug. I mean, he was, like, almost up there with Slim Charles and just couldn't get out. been around.
Yeah, but Marlo, I mean, Omar pointed out, like, he used to be muscle, and now you're, or wait, he was
muscle for Avon.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's, like, just moved over.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that says about him. Like, you know, I mean, it's just, like, it's all in the game, I guess, but it caught up to him. And, yeah, like, great points you made there. It's obviously Omar's operating way out of bounds, so.
Yeah, it's like you think about like the previous interactions he had with, let's see, there is Slim Charles, Fat Face Rick, and, you know, Michael earlier on in this episode. Obviously, he's not going to kill a kid, but like.
if there was one, though.
Slim Charles and Fat Face Rick, like, both kind of like talked themselves out of the situation of Omar doing severe harm to them. And like, Savino even says, like, I wasn't there when they killed the blind man, but still, like, that just enrages Omar enough to, like...
Yeah, like, why even bring up, like, I mean, okay, so...
But it worked for, like, Slim Charles, like...
Yeah, like, dude, I didn't, like, do what you think.
Yeah.
But, I mean, still, that's, I don't know. Yeah, what are you gonna say? Like, guy's got a gun to your head, so he doesn't know Omar's, like... intimately enough to know his code and this and that, so
yeah,
I don't know, like, you know, put a gun in my head, I don't know, you know, I didn't snitch, I know everyone thinks I am.
Yeah, I don't, it's like yeah, so
pretty brutal stuff, man.
Omar poses as a homeless guy with the push broom as a crutch and, you know, runs up on Michael.
Omar's hungover, posing as a homeless guy with the broom.
But, yeah, do we, like, Michael is, like severely terrified at the sight of Omar.
I think he's just like, yeah, this guy, you know, he's going to kill me right here if he sees, like, my face or recognizes me, but... You know, just shows like Omar's character where, like, would he even look? I mean, yeah, he's really astute and does all his homework, but like, maybe he would like not even assume that a kid could be doing what. Well, I mean, he's not naive. Like, he knows what they're capable of, but he doesn't like necessarily think, oh, Mike, you're the one trying to kill me in Monk's apartment, because they're still kids.
Yeah.
Maybe he has some like shred of, you know, doubt about, like, you know, some, I don't know, man.
He's, and
like,
his eventual killer is even there calling him a gimpy motherfucker.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, at some point we have Dookie job hunting in the paper and just like, you know, obviously he's a teenager, so not a lot, and, you know, not a lot of opportunities are going to present themselves to him, but like, just like everything seems so far out of his league. It's kind of like ties into the commentary that Simon tries to make, that there's no like real line of employment for a lot of kids that go through like the school system, and the corner or, you know, selling drugs is just like the most, that's something that's always hiring. So what are they going to do? They're just going to go to what they know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty, but funny nonetheless.
Oh, with his exotic dancing?
Or, I mean, I guess, yeah, but, you know, he's a good dancer, I guess. He could have, like, you know, maybe gone to the Baltimore like School of Arts.
Yeah.
But, you know, just, like, their commentary on, like, making it pretty relatable to what other kids, like, even not, like, in such dire circumstances would, you know, look at a job description and think about like a HVAC. Like, I probably made that same, like, what the hell is that word I always see? HVAC and like front desk, what the hell, you know?
Yeah.
And I laugh because, like, never mind. But like, that's always funny to me. Front desk. Like, furniture? Such a, yeah, it's a stupid term for a lot of reasons.
Um, anything
more. What are they up to? Carchetti's relishing in his fundraising chops, only to be disappointed with more, news of the
serial killer. Yeah, yeah. But you've mentioned in the past, Aidan Gillen's Irish brogue slips into some of his sayings.
Irish what? I'm not that smart, but
brogue? He sounds Irish.
Yeah.
I've heard it before here and there, but for some reason, this one really stuck out to me. He's 92. A lot of people want Carchetti to be their fucking governor. It's damn, are you going to solve the great potato famine? Is there a potato famine in Baltimore or Maryland or what's going on?
Damn, you have Brug opening a tap. Close your Brugge tabs.
Yeah, that was the Aidan Gillen, tremendous actor, but that is one of the few times that damn, that you really stick out like a sore thumb. Yeah, what else? A lot of people want me to be their fucking governor.
Just like a backdrop painting of sheep.
Yeah.
Little do we know. I mean, not little. Carchetti, true to his character, is going to put everyone in FEMA camps. They're just around the corner. Oh, these FEMA camps.
Man, do you think they knew that they were going to make a series about New Orleans after this, at this point where, this isn't the first time they've mentioned.
That's a good point. Yeah, definitely. Right.
But yeah, the FEMA camp is just a cosmetic solution to a much deeper systemic problem. And even Mike Steintorf, who's been the devil on his shoulder for much of his run, is they all kind of shut that down as something that's not really a viable solution, I'd say.
Yeah. And they're you know how much it is to even keep the shelters open 24/7. So I'm super naive and out of touch, I guess. I'm aren't those supposed to be staying open?
I don't know, man.
But yeah. They got 3 to 4K homeless people. I'm damn, dude, that's, it's bad, but thinking about where we're at,
Los Angeles,
3 to 4,000. Yeah. That's one district.
I drove by Echo Park today, and they really
no one there.
Well, the whole perimeter is fenced off.
Yeah, for repairs. Yeah. They do that. Yeah, park I know where there's tons of people. It's now their
repairs, quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, but there actually are repair things. I think they're redoing the field or something, but. Okay.
In the newsroom, we got some more the parallels going on between, the two different industries of news and policing, with Gus and Daniels giving speeches over an intercut sequence of how they're going to tackle the whole situation with the serial killer. And a lot of people are getting a lot of hard work, but at least everybody's getting paid a lot more to do stuff. So it's good news in a sense. They're all
overtime, man. OT.
Yeah.
The coppers love it.
Yeah.
And Gus is bringing up Olesker, who's a columnist.
Yeah.
Got some stuff. Finally going to post it because I've been waiting, man. I've been waiting to make my little run here. And I'm how do I title? And then I'm this guy keeps bringing this columnist who talks to some real characters that we have broken down, probably Norris Davis, maybe, I think he talked to. Fun Norris.
Yeah. Fun for-profit college Norris.
Yeah. Not motor pool overtime fraud. In the show, of course. I'm not, we're not here to defame anyone.
Yeah, definitely not.
Wait, how can you defame someone that's not famous?
I mean, he is famous. He has his own radio show.
Sorry, it's a joke.
Yeah, I get it. But
it's a crank phone call coming.
But this is the Baltimore Sun doesn't know it yet that they've like taken huge blows to their credibility with running with this fake story, but they have like Gus at one point says like, I'm confident that we have the resources at hand to like tackle this situation, you know, completely. At this point they're doing less with more.
Oh, there you go.
It's like they're doling out like all these duties, but they're basically just, I mean, it's not a puff piece. It would be a serious thing if it was real, but I don't know. I kind of get the feeling that like Gus, if he wasn't so preoccupied with Templeton and like trying to expose how much of a fake trout he is, he would like hone in just as much on Jimmy as well, because like I feel like in the meeting scene where Jimmy comes into the newsroom and talks with them, like Gus like gives him like a couple side eyes at one point where
I could smell the Jameson on this guy. Seriously. Yeah, if he would have just asked like real lens mellow, like, hey, and what's up with that guy Jimmy too, like, well, I guess like he hasn't been caught yet, but you know, he'd be like, oh, you know, he's does his own thing for sure.
Yeah.
And Gus could use his reporter skills, like not cop skills, to, you know, right, figure it out. But yeah, I don't know, man. What else do you want to talk about the newsroom?
Well, you did mention that Gus does go into his Kavanaugh's, right?
Yeah, I think, right?
Yeah. He does go into that bar. And he talks with Mello because he wants to kind of like pick his brain about this whole line that Scott is giving everybody about identity fraud with the lady who died of a seafood allergy or something. And it's a little complicated the way it's like all laid out, but basically the gist of it is like Mello lets Gus know like, yeah, there's no way possible that somebody could like just commit identity fraud multiple times like that, because we have it all in our records. So
yeah,
your boy is lying to you basically.
Yeah, the sister can't be like just like it's, yeah, wait, it was the sister, right?
I guess.
And then Scott said it's, oh no, there's just some lady in the neighborhood who like says she's a sister sometimes.
Yeah,
but it ain't that easy. Let's see. I mean, you know, Klebanow and Whiting, they just keep enabling old Scott, right? Like, even when Gus wants to pull things or do right, they just say, we'll run it under our, like, editorial, like, you know, use our powers to push more false information, fake news.
Yeah. I mean, Gus is, like, more or less admitting at this, I mean, not to Whiting and Klebanow, he's coming to them with more like discreet complaints, like, oh, like I feel like he's like fudging the language a little bit here and it's like kind of exaggerating. But then when he's like just talking to his like colleagues, he's like, yeah, this guy is straight up lying and like I don't like it, and kind of like admits at some point like yeah, like we all have, you know, lied or fudged things a little bit, like I've caught you lying before and like had to make you like correct some of your mistakes, but you know, he's not owning up to it, like you can lie but you just gotta, you know, gotta learn how to course correct. So like I don't know, it's really painful like watching him in the earlier episodes like praise Scott for like great work, to use that as like leverage for him to like bounce the whole seafood allergy thing off of him. But now that like he took Scott took the bait, it's like Gus has no reason to trust him at all anymore, which draws him to Kavanaugh's, where he sits and has a chat with Lieutenant Mello. But of course, somebody who is also there is Detective Munch from the Homicide: Life on the Street and Law and Order SVU universe, SV universe.
And there you go.
Dominic West made a comment that perhaps this actor who has played this role or this character has made more appearances on, like, he's made more appearances on different shows as the same character than any actor playing the same character before, because these are just like some of like the shows that like he's appeared on. Law and Order SVU, Homicide: Life on the Street, the original Law and Order, The X-Files, The Beat, which was like a Tom Fontana show from the 2000s with Mark Ruffalo, Law and Order Trial by Jury, the French version of Law and Order, Arrested Development, Sesame Street, The Simpsons, Chicago Hope, Saint Elsewhere, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Seinfeld, Walker, Texas Ranger. But yeah, this is like, you know, this is the ultimate fake read. Carchetti referencing O'Malley, like this is simulation working in overtime, but this is more for like, you know, TV history junkies rather than like, ooh, Baltimore history, local politics, Kurt Schmoke. Like, this is just like a one of like the few bits of like unashamed fan service that Simon has served up for TV junkies. I feel like.
How do you feel?
I don't know. I haven't watched like I feel like I've watched like Law and Order SVU episodes here and there, and like I've always like recognized the guy, you know, great actor, but I don't have enough of like a connection to Homicide: Life on the Street to have any like strong feelings one way about it.
Yeah.
Or the other.
Yeah, same here, man. We're strictly a fake read here.
Just want to drop that little bit of trivia for you all.
Good stuff, man. So yeah, that pretty much, you know.
You want to end it there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Scott just doing his fake stuff, and Gus just wants stories that feel real, right? I mean, wants the bubbles, you know, like angle without knowing it's bubbles, but
yeah,
you know, because Fletcher hasn't met him yet. Till this episode, so yeah. He does and get some good stuff. There's one last thing, you know, when Fletcher's being, you know, showed to like the true places, the places Scott couldn't actually like get into because he's obviously just no good at his job at this point, and, you know, obviously searching for things that aren't true, and you know, he offers Bubbles cash. What do you think about that? Like,
I know
what does this show, you know.
I feel like it's like almost kind of like triggering for Bubbles in a sense. Like when the cops, yeah, used to give him money for like the work he did.
Barely paid him.
Yeah, barely paid him, but just like, you know, shot him right back into that cycle of addiction. Yeah, maybe he's like smartened up a little bit and realized like, oh, you know, I'm working at the Viva house, man. Like I'm selling newspapers. I'm making an honest living.
Who needs a FEMA house when you got a Viva house?
There you go. I know Scott Templeton, when he walked in there, he's like, what? You don't have any homeless people here? Oh, why am I wasting my time? Like fucking whiny little prick. no, great actor.
Trick.
Tom McCarthy's fantastic actor. But yeah, it's kind of like telling that like the cops and Bubbles are nowhere to be seen on screen with each other this season. Like, damn, they really just forgot about him. Like, they just like exploited him for all he was worth, like, in order to like advance their own careers and like
pump and dump like a celebrity NFT drive.
Damn, that's a good.
No. That's you, man. You're schooling me on that.
The relationship that the cops have with Bubbles is like a pump and dump
scheme. Yeah.
No.
Oh, man.
All right. Yeah, we've talked this thing to death. Let's get out of here. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us. We're having a great time here.
Oh, yeah.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Gods Will Not Save You.
Check us out also via send us any like comments, questions, concerns you might have to thegodswillnotsaveyou@gmail.com. If you prefer to, you know, get in touch with us that way, we love to hear from you.
Yeah.
And
with that, thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Don't get took.